My name's Charlie. My name's Charlie Mullins. Look me up on Google, he said.
Was there ever a point where you thought, oh, I've made a mistake, maybe I shouldn't have done this?
And I wanted to give up. That really? Was the time I wanted to give up singing because it wasn't making me any money.
So how did that transition for you and him go from being just friends to a couple?
And when the rain is blowing in your face and someone's got a bubble machine and they're blowing bubbles at me.
So when you get those vibes from people, how do you deal with that being the woman? Because for the guy it's easy.
Yeah.
For the woman, it's not.
No.
Did you always take every opportunity that was handed, like put in front of you, or were you selective of the things you took? Hi, welcome back to Emily Abraham Presents the Love Luxury Podcast. And today I have with me a very special lady, that is Raquel Reno. Hello, Raquel.
Hello, Emily.
Nice to see you again.
I'm very happy to see you again.
We get on really well.
We do get on really well. And yeah. When I met you a couple of weeks ago at the women's event,
yeah.
Was it WOTC, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a wicked event, wicked restaurant. Yeah. And yeah, I think we clicked, like, out of everybody in there, like, we were on it.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to say that, though.
So, the reason we met, so we'll just say the reason we met first, and then we'll talk about you. So, people always like to know how I meet people. So, I met you, like you said, because of an event from WOTC, which is a women's magazine, which is now going into men as well. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they honoured your fiancé. Is that right? Is your fiancé?
Yeah.
Don't want to get it wrong. They honoured your fiancé with an award for Man of the Year type thing. It was an award, wasn't it? And they hosted a beautiful dinner for him with like-minded people. And it just so happened that myself and Adam got invited to that event as well. Yeah. And you were obviously there. And so was Charlie's grandson, Ashley.
Yeah.
So you guys were all sat together and we were sat kind of at the other end, but at the same side of the table.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, I'm going to, when the woman said, we're going to switch, I was like, right, I'm going to go sit next to Ashley. So I quickly got in there before anybody else could, so that we could have a conversation.
You heard me from down the end of the table.
The infectious laugh. Yeah. I couldn't help it. I was drawn to you. And I'm glad I did, because then we exchanged Instas and we've exchanged numbers and we've been in contact with each other, and I said I'd really like you to come on the podcast, so thank you very much for coming.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm really glad to be here,
and I know how busy you are.
Yeah, really busy. I've been working like a dog in the studio, so as much as I love it, I love being creative, but I've just spent the last 2 days at Wendy House Studios in Shepherd's Bush. And we've just written like 3 smash hits. So I was working with a guy called Blair McKitchen.
Okay.
I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm so sorry if that is wrong, but I think it's Blair McKitchen. Anyway, he's wild, but he's so good to work with. And, you know, we really, you know, bought each other out creatively. So he's worked with the likes of Sia, Paloma Faith, Amy Winehouse. And we just wrote a couple of, I like to say, smashers or bangers.
Bangers is a good one, isn't it?
And you know, I'm really pleased with how that went, and you know, that's definitely up in the top pile for my EP, which is coming out soon.
Let's get back to that in a minute.
Yeah,
because what I'll introduce you as, so you're Raquel Reno,
yes,
and you've got your social medias and everything, but you're a singer by trade. That is what you do. So if anybody knows you, they will know that you've got a great set of pipes on you and that you love to sing, and that's your calling and it's what you do. But before we get to that, let's get to a bit of the stuff that I kind of already know about you. And let's talk about where you came from, where you were brought up. Where were you brought up?
So I was brought up in Cheltenham in Gloucestershire.
So you were brought up in Gloucestershire?
In Gloucestershire. And yeah, I mean, like, I've always sang. Like, and I was born in the 90s as well, so it was that, you know, pop band, girl band, boy band era. But I was really drawn to those big singers, so like Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, and that soul gospel influence. And I think that's where the soul comes from in my music and in my voice, is that I just wanted to sing like them. And I just think my music has just expanded. The stuff that I listen to has just expanded, like, so much, and through different experiences and different places I've been in my life, different people I've met, different musicians that I've met along the way, they've obviously influenced me with, you know, maybe the music that they've listened to. And yeah, I mean, where am I going with this? I don't know.
So I was talking to you about where you came from. So yeah. You come from Cheltenham.
Yeah.
Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I've got two older sisters, Emma and Sarah.
Okay.
No one in my family is musical.
Okay.
Not even a musician. So it's really weird that I went into it. And it's just something that's always stuck by me, like through thick and thin, singing, songwriting, music, performing. That's it. It's me. That's like, you can't take it away from me. Mm. And I think that's, it was a very strange, even like we talk about it now, me and my family, you know, I'm from a small town in Gloucestershire, and you know, I've been like pretty much all over the world. And it's just very strange that I'm like the only musician in the whole family, not just my immediate one.
So that was something I was going to ask you. So you said you started singing when you were young.
Mm-hmm.
Were you any good?
Well, I used to think I was. I used to dance around. I tell you what, I used to dance around in the garden in our first little house that we had in Cakebridge Road, it was called. What a lovely name for a road, Cakebridge. And I had this little portable black CD player. And I remember buying my first single. It was Gina G, Ooh Ah, Just a Little Bit. Do you remember that song?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just used to dance all day to that song. And then as I was getting older, obviously the pop bands and stuff were coming out, and then I just wanted to be in one of them. And it was actually, my mother got bought a Cats musical video cassette at the time. God. where have they gone?
Yeah, they're not around anymore, are they?
And nobody watched this Cats musical video cassette. And I think I may have bought it for my mum for Christmas.
Okay.
And it was just, yeah, anyway, I was the only one that watched it. And I fell in love with the song Memory, and Elaine Page sings it. A few people have covered it, Barbara Streisand, I think. And I learned that song, and I had this little karaoke machine, which I got bought for my parents. And I just kept singing that song. I didn't have a backing track. I just learned it just a cappella.
Okay.
And anyway, we went to Cyprus. And there was karaoke nights in Cyprus. And then I wanted to obviously get up and sing as a 9-year-old girl at the time, baby Rach. And there was nothing in the book that I knew. I didn't know any song. So I sang that song on my own with a microphone. And then my father said, I think you should go to singing lessons. So it all kind of started from that moment. And then I went to a classical teacher called Karen Gillespie, her name was. And as much as I loved Karen, and I liked the music and singing My Name is Tallulah, and I love that song, Bugsy Malone. I still haven't seen it, but I think it's a fantastic song. Anyway, I wanted to do something more original and more technical. And at the time, I didn't know what that was. Mm. I think I was just getting a little bit bored of it. And
yeah.
So then I went on to vocal training with a guy called Michael Clifton, who was a bit more of a technical style teacher. And he taught me quite a lot today. Even I use his techniques today. And he taught me from the age of about 12, I think, until I left school around 16. And even then he was, you know, these teachers try and push you into like this musical theatre kind of songs. And I know it's a great way to sing, but there is a certain style for people that sing musical theatre is a musical theatre style. Yes. And I just didn't want to do that. I was just like, oh, I want to get in a rock band and I want to do this and I want to go there. And I was just like buzzing. Like I just wanted to go everywhere. And so then I went to the Academy of Contemporary Music and I studied just for 1 year there. And there was a lovely teacher there called Katie Hector, and she was part of a function band and she couldn't do a gig on a certain Saturday, and she offered it to me. I was 17.
Wow.
And that gig was probably the most nerve-wracking gig of my life, because the first song I had to sing was Beyonce, Crazy in Love, at somebody else's wedding. I've got a male guy who I'm working with, and the male singer that I was working with at the time, who actually knows everything, you know, from like every song that you can think of that would be played at a wedding. And there's little me, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm just about to sing Crazy in Love by Beyonce for the first time. My first wedding band gig is a 12-piece gig. I don't even have a car. I have to get the train here. Then I've got to ask someone for a lift back because I can't get a train home. It was just like hard. So, but it taught me a lot. It taught me that I wanted to go into work. And I left ACM and I just wanted to go to work. And then I took a contract abroad where I could sing six nights a week.
Okay. So before we get on to that,
yeah.
Were your family supportive of what you wanted to do?
Yes, they were supportive. They knew how much I loved it. But I think they did have a worry about how I was going to support myself financially. And, you know, is it realistic? Is it something that's going to, you know, help me in the future, like settle down and, you know, I wouldn't be able to buy a house or like, you know, maybe I should just settle down with a man, get married, have kids, get a house, get a normal job, you know, do the normal thing, as they would say. So I did have that. And we had a few rows about that, but we've made up now because it seems to be turning around a bit.
Yeah.
But these are all the things that I write about, though. So, I mean, all these experiences, you know, they're not bad experiences for me. I think it was just, as parents, that's what they cared about. They cared about my well-being and, you know, how I would, you know, support myself in the future.
Which is fair enough, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
Because
yeah.
As a woman or a young lady
yeah.
in the world, it's important that you can look after yourself, I think, you know. So
sure,
you know, their worries were valid to, yeah. to a degree, but also you kind of have to draw a line and say, well, this is what she wants to do
yeah.
and it's her passion. And I can see from you that it's something it's just you were born to do it. It's your passion. Mm. It's what you live by, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's also like I knew how to hustle for gigs. I knew where to go to make money in the end. Like all my experiences and everything, you know, years went by and I ended up in different countries. I mean, I wasn't making loads of money, you know, in my early 20s, but I was just buzzing from, you know, I was able to sing on stage as my job and still be able to get by. And I mean, it was not even 1500 quid a month sometimes. Yeah. But I was just loving it. And like, you know, I was a bit of a party girl as well. I enjoyed myself. But I learned an awful lot about how to work for yourself as well. And just got to move. Like that's one thing that I learned is that when things start going, you know, if you're, I don't know, if you're getting messed around by the agency or, you know, things don't feel right or you're not, you know, it's just not, you don't feel good about it. You've got to move on.
Yeah.
Like straight away.
So tell us about your first job that you got then. Tell us about that.
My first singing job, like proper contract. Yeah. I know it's a proper. was in Greece, in Rhodes, the little island in Greece. And I worked for a lovely couple called Kate and Manolis. And they were entertainers themselves. And anyway, they had this great entertainment company set up over there and they invited me to be part of an act called Soul Queens. I was part of a four-piece girl group singing soul covers, so anything from like the Supremes, sorry,
okay. Yeah.
Anything from the Supremes to like Aretha Franklin and Carole King, all those soul-y songs. And so I did that, and then I also worked in a nightclub for three nights a week between 12 and 3:30 a.m. in the morning, singing with a live band, you know, covers as well. So like pop covers, rock covers. And that's where I really, really liked working in a band. I was like, oh God, this is my thing. And that was my first job. And I had a brilliant time. It was brilliant.
Where did you go from there? Did you come back to England? Did you travel?
Now you're picking it. Yeah. So that was 2010.
Because you went to China in 2013, didn't you?
So when I left in 2010, I left Greece in 2010, I went into a full-time job and I worked at financial services and I hated every moment of it. Every single moment. Even the woman boss hated me. Like, I didn't even do nothing wrong. I think it was just my loud mouth. But or my laugh. But anyway, she was driving me out of there anyway. So like, yeah. I knew that it wasn't my place, and it would never be my place, and I'd never want to go back.
Yeah.
And but I'm glad I had that experience, because it just made me realize I don't want this. This is not me. Mm. And then I moved on into a receptionist and a hairdresser's. I was doing like three jobs at a time, and it was crazy. I was even running a half marathon, raising money for Great Ormond Street and writing songs for Great Ormond Street. I was just doing everything. Mm-hmm. But that singing has always been a part of it. Like, and then those three jobs, which I was all self-employed in, and I made sure of that so that I wasn't on a payroll so I could leave whenever I wanted to. Mm. I had some gigs come in from China.
How did that come about though? Because gigs in China seems really far-fetched. Like, how did that come about?
So on Facebook, yeah. When everyone was using Facebook, yeah. there was a picture. I think I'd met some musicians along the way, and they sent a picture. They put a picture up, and they were like saying, "Oh, we're in China getting like some noodles or something." And I was like, "Oh my god, that's amazing!" I commented. I said, "Oh my god, that's amazing! I don't suppose you're looking for a singer," as a joke. And he wrote back, the guy's post that I commented on, and said, "We are looking for a singer. Can you fly out next week?"
Wow.
And this was like on the Thursday or the Friday at the end of the week. And I was like, yeah, but I've got to like sack off the three jobs that I've got right now. Yeah. And I did it. And I was just like, oh, yeah, I can come Monday, I said to them. And they were like, oh, well, you have to do your visa first in Manchester. So I went up to Manchester on the Monday, flew out on the Wednesday.
Okay.
I rang my parents. Yeah. And I said, and they were in Cuba at the time, having a lovely holiday. And I must have been, 22.
Okay.
22 at the time. And I said, "Mum, Dad, I'm just letting you know I'm going to China in 2 days. What? And I said, "Well, yeah, I've taken on this contract and everything. Like, it's a proper agent, proper agency. And anyway, I'm joining the 7-piece band, and it's going to be great, I think, and I'll be fine." And they were like, "Rachel, are you sure?" That's my real name, by the way, Rachel. "Are you sure that this is the right decision? This is halfway across the world. Like, well, it's the other side of the world." And I said, "Yeah, why not?" And they said, "Well, what are you going to do about your jobs and stuff?" I said, "Well, I'm self-employed. I can do what I want." Mm. So I quit the jobs and then I went.
So this band that you went to China for, what kind of genre was it that you were singing? Was it the same soulful stuff?
No, it was all pop covers. Okay. So like, it could be anything from, you know, the 1950s to the top 40. So
okay.
I remember my first song of the night was "I Will Always Love You" by Whitney Houston. And the Chinese love that. Like, the Chinese, like, love a ballad. They love a big singer and a big ballad. And it was such an unusual contract as well. It was a brand new club called Miu Club, M-I-U, in a place called Lan Kwai Fong in Chengdu in China. And I had the best 4 months of my life, I'll be honest. It was just so different. And like, I never felt so alive. Do you know what I mean? Okay. It was just like, this is just wicked. Like, I was like, I'm so glad that I sacked off those three jobs and came here. And I was just buzzing. And I remember like the contract was weird. It was just like, we'd sing three songs. Then we'd have to wait 2 hours and sing another three songs as a band.
Okay.
And then wait another hour and a half and sing another three songs. It was just crazy. Yeah, I mean, it was just bizarre. I was there for about 4 months. And I think the first 2 weeks I lived out of those noodle pots, you know, from the shop. Because the thing is with Chengdu, it wasn't a developed Western developed. So it was very much the Chinese language. And, you know, just trying to get anything there was just, it was really hard work. I had many bad China days. BCDs, I called them, was bad China days. And it was a wonderful experience. I'm so glad I did it.
Was there ever a point where you thought, "Oh, I've made a mistake, maybe I shouldn't have done this"? Or was it just full on and like you said?
No, I just loved it. I was so into it. Mm. And yeah, it did start to get a bit frustrating towards the end because everything kept changing all the time. Mm. So like, I mean, and that's havoc on your patterns and stuff. And at the time, I probably didn't care. Because I was a bit of a pie girl, so I was just like, okay, whatever kind of thing. Mm. And actually, that's one thing that I did do. I started doing these solo gigs, which a saxophonist I met, he was like running some like freelance gigs around China. And I did a couple anyway. It's a funny experience, this one, and I have to share it because it's probably my most weirdest experience I've had performing. Yeah. And so anyway, I've just finished at 3 o'clock in the morning at Mew Club, yeah. straight in the car. I've slept a little bit in the car. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I've gone and had some noodles and some soup or something in some Chinese traditional like restaurant house. So I don't know. Yeah. And my gig starts at 9 o'clock and I've got to sing one song. And it was Adele, Make You Feel My Love.
Okay.
And they put this band behind me. Oh, sorry. The event itself was an auction event. So okay. where all these rich Chinese people, they come and they buy property, which hasn't even been built yet.
Okay.
So, and there's like balloons everywhere. There's like weird cakes everywhere. There's like horses everywhere. Just very like weird, just yeah. strange. And it's 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'm stood on stage and then there's a band behind me. There's a drummer, a Chinese drummer, a guy on a guitar, Chinese guy on a guitar, and somebody on the piano. And the backing track starts to play. And then they start playing, but they're not playing. They're just miming.
Oh.
And then I'm like, and when the rain is blowing in your face, and someone's got a bubble machine and they're blowing bubbles at me. And I just thought that's probably like one of my best stories.
Like, it's really weird. Like and something you'd see in a really abstract movie, isn't it?
Yeah. But I got like 200 quid for that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not like the ideal setting because obviously I've just come out of the club yeah, singing. Yeah. I've had a little sleep and you yeah. could do it then because you're 22. But I've had my noodles, I've had my soup. And the next thing I'm on stage and I'm singing with bubbles being blown at me. Just so bizarre.
Did you always take every opportunity that was handed, like put in front of you, or were you selective of the things you took?
At the start, yeah. When I was younger, I did. I just wanted to do everything. Mm. I just didn't, like, even if it was 30 quid, I'd just do it. Because I loved it. I was just like, it's like the safest place for me to be is on stage. And I just knew, like, you just never know what's around the corner and who you're going to meet. Like, if I didn't go on Facebook at that time and comment, I wouldn't have got the job in China. And I just think you've just got to, it's that drive. It's that kind of like, right, okay, we're going now. Like, take it. But yeah, some things that, you know, there was some bad things I took and, you know, and I learned from it. But then I wrote about it.
That's quite common, I think, for artists. So it's not something I haven't heard before. And I think that you're right, exactly what you said is that if you don't take the opportunity you might miss something. So why would you miss the opportunity? Because, you know, it could open a door that you would never have had open any other way.
Yeah, well, it's like fear of missing out, isn't it? And like, you know, I'd rather it be me than someone else.
Yeah, why not? So from there you went to Abu Dhabi and Dubai, didn't you?
Yeah.
And my notes say that you gave current pop songs a vintage twist with your rockabilly outfit.
Yes. So that
Tell me about that.
That was before I left Dubai, actually, because I started in Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
Then I went to Bahrain. Then I went back to China. And then I went to Abu Dhabi again and then to Dubai. So
how did it come about that you were in the Middle East? How did that come about?
Through the band that I went to China with.
Okay.
So the band leader at the time, his name's Dave. Dave managed to pull a contract in Abu Dhabi. So we started in a place called Warehouse Marina, which was another experience. But I loved it and hated it at the same time.
Yeah.
I got very sick on that contract with sinuses and it was very painful. But I just did it anyway. Mm. But there was some great times I had there. Mm. And I don't miss the box room we all sat in. That was another thing. We had this like 8-piece band, right? So, and we weren't allowed to mix with any of the customers.
Oh.
So we had to all, like when we weren't performing, we had to sit in this like tiny, tiny room. Like it was like a quarter of this room. And it's like where they put like storage and stuff in. And I think I've got a photo somewhere. I hope I find it because it's real. It's like real, like that's the raw kind of gritty side of, you know, what everyone thinks is the glamorous side of things. But yeah, so Abu Dhabi, I did a while in Abu Dhabi and then went to Bahrain for another contract. But in between that time, there was a bit of a break and I wanted to give up. That was the time I wanted to give up singing because it wasn't making me any money.
Mm.
I was in a bad place because I just kind of felt like, where am I going to go with this? So I was 23 years old and I thought I was old at the time, probably. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to have to, I need to sort myself out with some money or something. So I tried to get, I moved actually to London, into Morden. It was horrible. It was like the worst place I've ever lived in my life. I lived in an attic. And
stuck up in the attic.
No, I was. It was an attic. I couldn't even stand up in there. Oh, it was like on a slant, yeah. Right? Oh, it was awful. And I was just living with these people and it was just horrible. Anyway, so I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Morden, but I didn't like it anyway. It wasn't for me. And I think I spent 6 weeks trying to find a job. And I'd previously worked for Clinique when I was studying in Guildford at the ACM. So I was working part-time for them. So I was trying to look for another job on Clinique again in central London. And I did all these interviews. And anyway, long story short, I ended up going to Dubai from them. They gave me the job at John Lewis, but I didn't go. I ended up going to Dubai. And I thought, oh, I'll try real estate.
You sacked off John Lewis. You didn't bother taking that job.
No.
For Clinique. No. And you went to Dubai.
Yeah.
Doing real estate.
Yeah. So I went to Dubai. I stayed with a mate of mine. And I started doing interviews for real estate. And I went to one place. They called me last minute. And I was out drinking Jager bombs, I remember. And I must have had about 9 or something stupid. And I came out of Rock Bottom. It was called Rock Bottom, the place. Like, ironically. And I got an email, which I hadn't seen, and I saw it on the way out of the club. I was like, oh, I've got an interview at 11 o'clock tomorrow. Oh my God, what am I going to do? So anyway, went to bed, woke up, hanging. Anyway, turned up. She wants me only to sit there for like 2 hours, literally. It was the longest interview of my life. Anyway, got the job.
Ta-da. Yeah.
And I moved quickly into a sales environment. Again, I'm not an office person. I know I'm not. I'm too loud and I'm too, you know, like free spirit kind of thing. And it was hard. It was so hard for me. And I had all this like information in front of me. And I was like driving up and down Dubai. I hardly had any money. Like I was literally skint at this time. Anyway, then I started thinking, oh, I wonder if I can do some singing because that's what I'm good at. And I knew, like, if I can find the right people to connect with singing, I might be able to make some money on the side whilst I get things going with the real estate. And then I found out about this jam night that was going on in Pizza Express in Jumeirah Lakes Towers.
Yeah.
And it was obviously a school night for me. So I'm rocked up there at like 10 o'clock at night, sing a few songs, make loads of friends in the place and who I still speak to now. Mm. And then I meet an agent. I can't remember his name now. He ran a company called The Fridge. And he said, I think I might have a gig for you on Sundays. And it's a solo gig, singing with a DJ. I was like, perfect. I know how to do that. Brilliant. And so I started working at Tsukuba in a place called, can't remember now, it was like a sushi place. But I started working there every Sunday. And I was making 800 dirhams per show, which is about £200 at the time, I think it was. Mm. Yeah, it's changed now. So that's 2, 4, 6 here. And I'm thinking in my head, that's £800 a month. Brilliant. Okay, I can survive right now. I was staying at a friend's. I was giving a little bit of money here and there for food and whatever. Until things get going, I'll just survive kind of thing. Mm. Real estate companies, I think they didn't sack me. They just kind of said, your visa's not going through. We can't have you work in the office. So I'm going to have to leave. I'm going to have to go back to the UK. Mm. And a DJ friend of mine at the time, we were sat on the beach together. And I said, I'm about to book a flight to go back home. And I was gutted. I was gutted. I was just like, how is this even happening? What am I going to do? And then I get a phone call at that moment. Like, really weirdly, from the band leader of the Fuse band who I went to China with and to Abu Dhabi with. He said, our singer's leaving on Monday. Can you replace her in Bahrain, which is an hour flight from Dubai? Mm. I was like, yes. And it was St. Patrick's Day. And that's why St. Patrick's Day is my favourite day of the year now, because I remember how low I felt. Yeah. And I was like, okay, yes, I'm going. So I got there. So that means all my accommodation's paid. Mm. All my food's paid. I get a salary. I'm safe. And I had a great 4 months. Mm. That's how I ended up in Bahrain.
Yeah.
And then I came back to Abu Dhabi, did another contract, and then I saved all my money, and then I went freelance, and then I moved from Abu Dhabi to Dubai, and then was freelance there as well.
So in those times when you were feeling down, because the thing is, when people see successful people or people they deem to be successful, they don't think they've ever had the hard times.
Oh, no. Oh, I've had them all.
But what did you, how did you cope? How did you pick yourself up to say, actually, this isn't the end of the world and I can go and do a job I don't want to do for now just to keep going? Because at the end of the day, you could have just said, all right, I'm going to wallow in self-pity and lock myself in my old bedroom at my mum and dad's house. But you didn't do that. You kept trying to find new opportunities.
Yeah.
And also, not only that, you were doing them in different countries.
Yeah.
Every time was a different place. Yeah. So you got to learn a new culture, a new way of life, find new people to meet. That's not easy to do even in your own country and hometown, let alone somewhere else. How did you sort of like navigate all of that?
I think I'm a big believer in cracking on. I love that word. You've got to crack on. So tell you what, no one else is going to do it for you. You've got to do it yourself. And, you know, I've been in like terrible situations. I mean, it took me all day to go through them. Like, but it's all part of the experience. Like, you know, I traveled a lot, and you speak to any traveler, anyone that travels the world doing whatever, like they could just be traveling, but there's always downsides to traveling. And that's because you are in different countries and in different cultures and you're meeting different people. But I think what I did was I just tried to do as much as I could. So, you know, I set up a vocal studio there. I started teaching kids in a school, like part-time. I didn't care, like, you know, how much money I was making. It was just money. And I think I am a bit, like, you know, of a money getter, like that's like, that inspires me to work, and because it's survival. Like, I mean, it's like that I have spent like my 20s surviving, and I just think that's, you know, you've just got to get in that habit of, you just got to crack on. And, you know, there was like, I'm a big believer in manifesting. I love manifesting. I think it works, and
so do I.
There's a lot of things I wrote down maybe 5 or 6 years ago, which have come to reality now. And I literally just wrote a little thing like on a piece of A4 paper, and it was certain things, and I'm halfway down the page, and I'm ticking most of them off. And I think that's really important, is visualizing, you know, where you're going. I already know where I'm going. I already feel it. It's already here. And I think if you can feel like that, then, I mean, you've cracked it, I think.
You've worked. It's half the battle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think for the youth of today, so a lot, maybe some young people might watch this podcast, and they'll be like, oh, but I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And or when I'm older. And that's the worst part.
Really is.
Once you get beyond that, and then you figure out, actually, this is what I'm really good at. And actually, I enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
And then that then becomes your path, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's very easy, like you said, when things don't go right, that you then fall into a path you know is not right for you.
Yeah.
For you, it was insurance and real estate.
Yeah.
And that's very easy because there's money in insurance and there's money in real estate, and you can get a solid wage from that. But are you going to be happy doing it?
No.
Not if your vocation is something completely different.
Yeah. Well, that's the message, isn't it? Like, I mean, you've got to do what feeds your soul, and it could be anything. It could be picking flowers.
Yeah.
Work in a flower shop. Learn how to set up your own business in flowers. Learn how to do amazing things with flowers. Like, expand like your knowledge and you know, be different somehow. Or ask that person for some advice, or be inspired by that person. Who's the best florist in the world? Go there. And think that's like when you start getting passionate about something. That's when you get opportunities, because you're sending messages to the universe, and it's going to return back to you.
I agree with that 100%. And something you just picked out is really valid, and that is, find the best in what you want to do, yes, and either copy them, mm-hmm, or try and do it the way they're doing it. Yeah. Because the thing is, there's so much in the world that, mm-hmm, there's no reason why two people can't be doing almost the same thing, no, but with your own flair on it. And it's very easy to actually watch what somebody's doing, think, they made a little mistake there. If I did it slightly different, mm-hmm, I'd actually be better than them.
Yeah.
And if you're switched on enough to see that, then you're going to go really far.
Yeah.
Isn't,
yeah,
it?
I think you just got to, and it's like, have faith in yourself, like have, yeah, confidence in yourself that you can do it. And I'll tell you what, there are times when you don't. And I'm sorry, but it's just part of the journey.
Of course it is.
You just don't, like, and then you get depressed, and then, you know, nothing's going right. You don't want to exercise. You're eating wrong. You're drinking loads, and you're doing everything just to take your mind off it. And you get that. Mm. But you've got to crack on, and you've got to find the positive somewhere, because it's there. Mm. You've just got to get it. And get it. Grab it.
I agree 100%. So, how did Nashville come about, and what were you doing there?
Oh, I love Nashville. Well, I'm a massive Dolly Parton fan.
You've got to love Dolly.
Oh, I love Dolly. But we're not talking about Dolly. We're talking about Nashville, because Nashville is amazing. It's the Music City. It's called Music City for a reason. It is amazing. And I think if there's one place where I am so open creatively, it is Nashville.
Okay.
As soon as you get off the plane, you can smell it. And I loved it. I was writing in hotel lobbies and singing in hotel lobbies. And it was just, and that's not, you know, being booked for it. That's just me singing in a hotel lobby. Yeah. But you're allowed to do it there. Like, it's just, yeah, like, it's normal. And so the story is quite a long story. But when I moved to London, I was introduced to a couple of people who took a big liking to a track I wrote called Biker Boy, which I didn't release in the end, and I'm glad I didn't, because I'm doing better stuff now anyway. And the idea came from the man that I'd been talking to, as, oh, you should go to Nashville and work with these people I know who, they'll cut like 4 records for you for this amount, blah, 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 blah. And so, oh, it sounds like a good idea. And it was all kind of like up in the air, and it wasn't really, nothing was really gluing together. Anyway, at that time, I realised that I needed a manager. I need someone to take the reins a little bit, mm, just to guide me into the right places. So I went on the search for a manager, and then I found one who happened to used to work in Nashville in an office,
okay,
and had many connections with different musicians and studios and just the whole setup. And it was actually cheaper for me to record in Nashville with the musicians and setup there than it would be in the UK, believe, oh, okay, it or not. I wanted to go because I, yeah, was just like, Nashville sounds great, and it would, yeah, be great PR, and we'd, mm, do some filming, and, mm, we'll get some photos, and, you know, we'll really go for it kind of thing. And so we went, and it was amazing. Like, it was just like the best there. The level of musicianship, it just blew my mind. Like, the inspiration that is just kind of driven just from the surroundings that you're in, it's just like, it's priceless. And I actually did meet Dolly Parton's backing vocalist, Vicky Hampton, who is one of the most loveliest women I've ever met. And I felt like a little girl, because I was thinking, oh, can you talk to Dolly about me? And I wrote her a little note. I said, just want to let you know that you really inspire me. I hope she got it though. Yeah. Like, because I do think I'm going to meet Dolly one day, and I am going to be one of those starstruck people.
Yeah.
I don't think I really get starstruck, but with Dolly, I think I might. And we've got to write a song together. But anyway, yeah, it was amazing. We were writing in Nashville, and we'd written beforehand in London, and we took the songs over there to be produced by Muscle Shoals style musicians and that Memphis kind of background.
Yeah.
And we got a really nice sound. It's quite a live sound as well. And yeah, like, we came back with just loads of work, and it was fantastic. And then we were due to release last year, but it wasn't ready for me. So I stopped it, and I wanted to move on for my manager, because I found a better one.
How long ago was Nashville?
Nashville happened twice last year, so I went back twice. Oh, so it was last year? Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
So it was, it's gone quite quickly, really. Yeah. But I like it that way because I just like to get things done.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I'm writing newer material now as well. Mm. So I'm still using some of that material, but actually what's happened is that I'm actually developing a lot more with the people that I'm working with here. And we've really, really got something really nice together now. Like, it's just, it's blowing me away every day. Like, every week it just seems to excel a little bit more. And it's taken a lot of patience, but I think that was probably one of my downfalls is patience. Like, okay. I just don't have any patience. You could arguably say I'm the most impatient person in the world, but I had to learn to do that and just have a bit more trust in people. Now, there's a lot of reasons why I didn't trust people because of certain things that happened to me in the music industry. Yeah. But now I feel like I've, you know, we're all on the same page. Me and my team, we're, you know, we've got this really good thing and we're all on the same page, all the same vision, and it's only going to go up from here. Yeah.
So how did you cope through COVID? What were you doing through COVID? Because obviously entertainment and hospitality were probably the worst hit because of COVID. So what were you doing in that time?
So I'd moved back from Dubai then. So that was January, the end of January 2020 is when I decided to move back from Dubai. And I thought, you know, I'm going to spend some time in England. I actually went through a bad relationship breakup and I kind of turned my back on Dubai. I was just like, right, I've had enough. I've got to get out of here. I need to get over this kind of thing. And that's what I did. That was actually the truth. And I thought, I'll be all right in England. I'll just, you know, speak to a few people that I knew before kind of thing, get back on the circuit and, you know, get some gigs in. I'll go solo. And I even went to Cheltenham Racecourse for the wedding exhibition. Like, I bought like a big poster with my name on it, wedding singer. I got my speakers up. I'm the only person singing in there. And I just tried to work in as a singer in England. And it was a really depressive time for me because it was so miserable, the weather. Mm. The weather was horrendous. There was 3 storms when I got back every weekend. So for a month, there was storms and it was dark. I was going through a breakup. I was just like, who am I? And what have I done? Like, I've turned my back on like my whole business in Dubai pretty much.
And an amazing way of life and weather. And, you know, the lifestyle there is unbelievable compared to the UK.
Yeah.
And you've turned your back on all of that.
Because of a relationship.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
Yeah.
I was like mentally not well because of it. And I'm not scared to say that because it's life. Like, I mean, how many people have been through a bad breakup? Mm. Probably 98% of people. And I just think, and I don't worry, I used it all to my advantage. I wrote some bangers. But I just remember being back and I was just thinking, I've got to get back to Dubai. I said, what am I doing? I could be working 6 nights a week right now. Mm. What am I doing? Mm. So I booked my flight, March 26th it was meant to be. Lockdown happened, I think, was on 23rd of March. So we couldn't go anywhere. Mm. So I was stuck in England. I was going to get back with the ex as well. That would have been a bad idea. Yeah. So I just think it was just all like, you know, it all kind of happened for a reason. And then when I came back as well, I bought myself a laptop. I bought myself a Mac Pro because I had like quite a bit of money in the bank from Dubai. And I thought, do you know what? I'm gonna set up my home studio. I'm gonna teach online, and I'm gonna teach myself how to produce music. So I bought Logic Pro, and then I rang a friend of mine who's a producer. I said, do you mind doing me a favor if you've got nothing to do in lockdown? Can you just talk me through a few bits, and I'll learn from you, kind of thing, of how to, you know, produce songs. And I did. It wasn't great, but I mean, like, it was good enough. And then I had the idea of raising some money for charity. I thought, okay, I'm going to find a local charity. I'm going to write a song based on COVID. It's called Higher Than the Clouds at the time. It's one of those cheesy pop songs. And I'm going to raise some money for this little Winston's Wish charity, which is basically a charity to help children in bereavement. They're Cheltenham based, and I thought, well, I've got nothing else to do. It's either that or I'm drinking gin. So yeah. And I did drink a lot of gin. I mean, Amazon at the time, like, just like, ding dong. We've got orange flavour today. Oh, strawberry the next day. And then I realised I couldn't drink Tanqueray because it sent me loopy. Anyway, so anyway, that's another story. And yeah, so I did that through lockdown. And then I, the people that I was living with in Dubai, because yeah. I was living with a lovely couple who are my best friends now. In a lovely villa in Jumeirah Park in Dubai. Mm. And they actually moved to Spain just before lockdown in Dubai.
Yeah.
And they ended up in the mountains somewhere in Cartama, and this house, that their dream house, basically. And the flights were opening up on July the 1st, I remember, for Europe. And I was like, get me out of here. Mm. So I booked a flight to Spain, went to see them. I was meant to be there for 2 weeks, and then I was going to go back to Dubai. Still chatting to the ex, and then and then that ended, thank God. And then I ended up staying in Spain, and I met an old buddy of mine who I did a function gig with him, like, in London a couple of times. I was like, where do I get gigs? To my mate who was in Marbella, and he was like, oh, I'll introduce you to Nikki. She's like, sang all the way down the coast, and she's been here for 12 years or whatever, who's now my best friend.
That's good.
And everyone just helped me. Mm. Like, I had all my equipment sent over from the UK. I went into every bar. I rang every bar, or went into every single bar to get a gig. Mm. And then I got one. And I was singing Tennis Club on every Sunday. But I got £200 for it. And I was like, great. Paid a bit of rent to my mate at the time. He had a spare room going. I was like, oh, I'm in there. And then that was like, that was the end of 2020. I met Charlie at that time as well.
So I was just going to come to that, because that's where you met, isn't it?
In Spain, yeah. So I saw him on the beach, actually, and that's how I met him. I went, oi, you look like Rod Stewart. Are you a Rod Stewart tribute? That was literally how we met. And
what did he say?
No, I'm not Rod Stewart tribute in his Cockney accent. Yeah. I said, oh, I like your crocodile shoes, I said. My name's Charlie Mullins. Look me up on Google, he said. And I didn't, because I was out at the time.
Yeah.
And then a few days went past, and then I bumped into him, like, maybe a couple of weeks, maybe a month down the line, I think. But I found out then the person who I'd made friends with was his hairdresser.
Okay.
And then he was sat outside his salon, so that's where I bumped into him again. And then now he was like, I was like, all right, Charlie, like, shouted at him, as I do, because I shout at everybody, like, ah. And he was like, oh, are you coming to Andy's Beach on Sunday? It was where I met him, actually. Yeah. And they do like a band barbecue thing on Sundays. Anyway, I said, no, I'm actually flying to Dubai in a couple of days. I'm going to go back and work over there for a bit, because they've opened up entertainment again. And all my contacts were there. I was getting over my breakup, and I managed to score a four-day-a-week gig in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I'm going to be over in Dubai in over Christmas time. Oh, let's exchange numbers, and you can tell me where you're singing and stuff. And that was it. Went to Dubai, started working, auditioning. I was, like, absolutely knackered, I remember, because I was just so nervous all the time. And I ended up moving into a box room in JBR, and it was literally smaller than the attic room. Living with five other people at the time, all, like, different cultures, different people, which is nothing wrong with that. It was just, you know, I had nothing in common with these people. Being who I am, I'm quite an open, loud person, and it was dark in there, and it was just, I was just in a bad place. I was just like, I gotta get out of here somehow. And then I started doing what I usually do. So my survival method. Yeah. So I go out, I go and find the work, and I did. And then I was working 6 nights a week again. And then I ended up moving into another place, which was great. It was much better.
You were in Dubai. You were doing 6 nights a week, and you'd moved into a much better place.
Yeah.
What happened then?
I was hanging out with Charlie, because he came to watch one of my gigs. I was working at Lucky Voice, and he loved it.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you know, where do you see yourself going from here? Like, you've obviously got a talent. And I was like, well, you know, this is the only way I can make money kind of thing. You know, I write songs, but I'm not really confident enough with them. I've got, you know, stuff, you know, in folders and stuff, but I'm not really sure, like, if I'm going to do anything with them and whether they're going to make me any money, because it's hard. It's really hard to make money from your own music in the music industry. Not beating around the bush there, it's hard, even now. That's when he said, well, let me introduce you to some people in London, but let's start with your business card first, because it's shit. Sorry, it's rubbish. And it was this little paper thing that I had, and it was just, no, it was horrendous. Anyway, so he did all that for me, and we were just friends for, like, you know, 10, 11 months.
Yeah.
And he was just helping me out. And it was just like, it was a lovely thing, because it was just like, he was just kind of like sent just to help me. And it was at a time where I was just like, you know, I can't carry on like this. You know, I'm 31 now, 30 now. And I can't, you know, continue to keep doing this. Like, I'm knackered. I'm not looking after myself. I'm as much as like, I am like the go-getter and I get up and I do this and I do that, it takes a lot of energy from you. And I thought, all right, okay. So I had the opportunity to get off the roundabout, and he had a spare room. I love a spare room. And he said, come and live in London. And he had a girlfriend at the time. That didn't go down well. But we were honestly just friends. Yeah. And he obviously saw something in me and wanted me to get there. And as the person he is, as a business person and someone who has, you know, been very heavily involved in apprenticeships in the Prince's Trust, I think that's where it come from. And I just think that's such a wonderful thing to happen to me, was somebody to say, I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel a bit sad. Not sad.
Emotional.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. And, so he was like, come and live with me. I was like, oh, I don't think I should do that. I said, what about your girlfriend? I said, don't worry about her and everything. Like, you know, she's fine. Like, it's fine, whatever. Like, you're going to be doing your own thing and whatever. And it was only for a while. And I was booked to do a gig for him.
Okay.
His Christmas party. And, but it was a late Christmas party in the middle of August.
A summer party.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I got to London.
Okay.
And then since then, it's just kind of...
So how did that transition for you and him go from being just friends to a couple? Because I think people do want to know that, because it's...
It's a lovely story.
Because you were friends.
Yeah.
He trusted in you. Yeah. But, yeah, he did have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then how did that come about? How did it just translate into something different?
I think... We became inseparable. It was always about, you know, whatever you're doing, I want to do kind of thing. And it was, and a lot of people saw it, and a lot of people were like, what's going on between you and Rara's my nickname. But, and we were like, nothing. And it wasn't. And I was seeing somebody else, and he was obviously seeing someone else, whether it was serious or not. And then like, it was just always like us together. Like, I would be round and we'd be working on my website or my business card, or, you know, he'd invite me out for lunch with a group of his friends, or vice versa. He'd be coming to my gigs in Spain, or, you know, it was just like always that. And I think it was more uncomfortable for other people than it was for us, because it was just so natural for us. And then we went out one night and we were in a bar in Marbella, Joy's Bar. And then like we just kind of got together then. And I was like, oh no, and then I panicked and I was like, I don't think this is gonna work, like age difference, all of that. And then we kind of left it for a bit, and then he was like, do you want to come to Dubai? And I was like, well, yeah, I was gonna go anyway because I want to see if I can set some work up there, because there's me thinking I've got to the end of the year in the apartment in London. I'm thinking, well, I'm probably gonna start making a move. He was, oh yeah, let's go to Dubai, and so we did, and we, you know, we stayed in two bedrooms and everything, and then we just sat there one night, and I was like, so what is this kind of thing, you know, what's going on? We had that conversation, and he was like, well, I want to try it, and I was like, are you sure? And he was like, yeah, and I said, are you sure? And he was like, yeah, and then I said, let's do it then, but let's just keep it a secret for now.
Yeah.
And we slowly, you know, it slowly came out over the next few months. And then he met my dad, who's also a plumber. And that went well. And then, like, we started working together and, like, you know, life's been brilliant. It's just been, you know, we've done so much together. And we obviously complement each other. And like, even I can see that. It's, you know, we're both big personalities. And we've both got different things. Like, he's a businessman. I'm a singer-songwriter with my own business. And, you know, he loves, you know, a bit of TV and media and stuff. And so do I. And I think, you know, we're living in that same world. And I think that's why it works so well as well. And he's really funny. And I sometimes think I'm funnier, but...
So when I met you, I knew you were his partner and I could see that the chemistry is there, but it's a really comfortable chemistry. Like, it's natural. I can see that the relationship between you two is not strained. And there is quite a large age gap between the two of you. There's no, we can't make no bones about it.
I mean, I think we're in the Guinness World of Records now.
No, you're not.
We beat Catherine Zeta-Jones and Michael Douglas. Sorry.
You're so funny. So there is an age gap. So when you meet people, I can assume, as being a woman of the world, that people are going to be a little bit judgmental of the relationship between the two of you. It's natural. I mean, it's not natural for them to be judgmental, but it's natural that there's going to be some judgment there. At the end of the day, it's nobody's business but you guys. No. And if you're happy together, then that's all that matters. And you are clearly very happy together. Yeah. I can see that. But how do you feel when you get those vibes? Because I know that you're very intuitive. Mm. I can sense that from you. I sensed that as soon as I met you. So when you get those vibes from people, how do you deal with that being the woman? Because for the guy, it's easy.
Yeah.
For the woman, it's not.
No.
Because there's always assumptions made about the woman, whereas there's never any assumption made about the man.
Yeah, well, I used to care. Actually, that was I wrote a song about it yesterday, and that was the first line of the song. I used to care.
Yeah.
I did used to care because it was such a big transition for me anyway, because I was doing everything what I've told you about, and then suddenly someone's helping me. And I just thought, you know, at the time, I just thought everyone was judging me. Like, everyone just, like, thinks that I'm this, that, and the other, and, you know, the usual nonsense and whatever. But now I don't care because they don't do anything for me, these people. Mm. And I mean, my circle of people has gone from, like, a lot of people down to not so many.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful I've still got those not so many. Mm. I'm really grateful because actually life's easier without the other people. And I used to hide things a lot. And it was just so much anxiety came from just having to hide who you are and your life. And, like, you know, there's so much more about me than, you know, what they think of me. Mm. And I just think, well, I've got it. I've just got to stop wasting energy on it. And I did. And now I'm in a really good position. And I've become really strong-minded about it. And I'm still nice. Still Rachel, you know. Mm. But I also have to run my own business, and no one's going to help you.
They're not.
No one's going to help me but me, and Charlie will help me. But
the thing I always think is, and it's something, it's like a real cliche, but you can't pay your bills with someone's opinions.
That's it. And I love that saying. That was going to come up at some point. Yeah. And that is such a strong message, because these people, and it only drives from one thing, and it's jealousy. Mm. Jealousy is a powerful thing, and we all do it. We all get jealous, but it's how, you know, they could be, you know, innocent jealousy, you know,
like a healthy, you know, I get that, yeah.
But, like, actually judging somebody before you meet them is a different level. It's just like I just want those people to stay far away from me because they have no space here.
Around you.
Yeah.
I agree 100%, and I think that whenever anybody meets you, you're such a bright, shining light in the room with your infectious laugh that I couldn't help but be drawn to you. And I think that anybody with an open mind would feel the same. Mm. And then, like you said, anybody that's got a closed mind, why would you want them around you anyway? What? You wouldn't, would you?
You just don't. No.
And it's, and you don't need them.
No.
So let them have their opinions and their views.
And when you get them, you get the comments. I mean, I've had like best mates do it. Like the best mates.
Yeah.
Like it, and you know, that I struggled with that more than anything because, you know, when you are low or and you, everyone gets those days, sorry, but it's just a fact of life. Yeah. We all get low days and down days and I call them Debbie Downers, you know.
They are Debbie Downers.
Negative Nancy.
Moody Margaret, we say in our house.
Moody Margaret, I like that one. And you know, and it's you, and at that time it was probably about, you know, being judged and, you know, these people trying to upset me kind of thing. And even when your best friend's doing it, they're the people that you want to turn to and they weren't there. And it was just like, well, you know, I'm just on my own then, am I? See ya.
Yeah, but you weren't on your own because you had Charlie and he's been, I can only assume he's been there as a rock
he's
and a
been
support
very
for
supportive,
you.
Yeah.
And I think when you're in a healthy relationship, that is what makes the difference, isn't it? Because then it doesn't matter what anyone else is saying because you've got that person you can turn to at the end of the day and have a cuddle and have that companionship with that, you know, replaces the friendships that you would have had with your friends anyway.
And someone who understands it because he's had it all.
Yeah.
Like he's, you know, he. The thing is, there's always sacrifice that comes with success and it's, that's also a strong message is you do have to sacrifice some things to be successful and that can be from anything from missing things or like missing birthdays or holidays or weddings or whatever. That is the sacrifice that you have to make to be successful.
Mm.
And if it's people, then that's easy now for me.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's not even a thought goes into it now. I've already worked it out.
It opens your eyes, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. And I knew when it happened as well. I was just like, no more.
But that also comes with maturity as well.
Yeah.
Because once 100%. You get to a certain age, I think you realise your eyes are open a lot more to the world. And those rose-tinted glasses that we have as young women tend to fade away and then we actually see through a clearer lens and we can see actually maybe that person's intentions towards me were never good.
No.
And they were quite happy for me to be kept down and didn't really want to see me rise up.
Yeah.
And so
but it's changed as well for them. Yeah. Change is a difficult thing for some people.
Yeah, it is.
And which is it's natural and you know, but I, the thing is I'd rather be where I am now than I was before because it was a struggle and it still is a struggle. That's the thing. Like, I mean, my life has changed dramatically, but being in music as a female artist right now with all the stuff going on, with all the things you can and can't do, with all of the things going on in London right now, is hard. It's so, so hard to get out there and even in the digital world which is running the music industry, like I mean people are listening to music for free now and you know how does the music industry overcome that so you know we're all trying to find these ways to make money, social media, TikTok and everything, but really like we want to do is make music.
I am
gonna be waiting for the check but
let's talk about the Shooting Stars. Was it a gala?
Yeah, the Shooting Stars Ball.
And you sang there, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was amazing. You did so well.
I love Shooting Stars hospices. Yeah. They're, I mean, Karen Sugarman, she runs the hospices along with Simon Cowell, Tony Hadley, Joan Collins. And Karen Sugarman, I have to say, is an angel sent from above. She is the most kindest, loveliest lady I've ever met. Like, she's not got bad bone in her body. Like, she's just the most wonderful woman, like, to be, like, working for that charity. I mean, her job is, like, it's just mental how she deals with it. Like, you know, I ring her over Christmas and she's like, oh, I'm in the hospice. And she's with other families and little kids, do you know what I mean? And I just think that's, oh, God, how amazing is that? Like, she's there and we're on holiday. So Shooting Stars I've sang there twice in a row now. So the first year I'd wrote a song called Glitter, which I originally wrote for a little girl called Chloe Balakwai to help raise money for her neuroblastoma treatment. And unfortunately she passed away.
Oh, that's so sad.
Really sad, because she was just turning 11 and you know, I started talking to her family quite a bit and just the most loveliest family. And anyway, so, and then they invited me back in November, just gone. And that was basically with the new stuff that I've been doing with a 9-piece band. And it was an amazing experience. And, you know, it led on to other things, and sang at the BBC Awards as well, which, you know, Simon Cowell was also there alongside, you know, lots of people on TV and the BBC. And yeah, just quite a lot of people there. And
how does it feel for you being on stage? What is that feeling that you get? How can you put it into words and help other people understand what it is for you that pulls you back into it all the time?
It's a bit like therapy for me. Yeah. So it's the safest place for me to be. And it's like all the work, because there's so much work that goes into it, into songwriting, into creating songs and into the production, into, you know, meeting co-writers and meeting studio engineers, like, and all of that and all the rehearsals, and that 10-minute moment that you've got is like 3 months worth of work, solid work. Mm. And it's that what you work for, is that 10-minute moment of just going, here I am, kind of thing. And that for me is like, it's the best thing that I've ever done, really, in music, is just being able to sing my own songs.
And is it do you have like an adrenaline rush?
Yeah, I get nervous. Do you? But now, so I was watching a programme. Oh, who was it? Someone said it. Who was it? Oh, it was on the One Show, and he was saying to some kids, I don't know who he was, I can't remember his name, but he was saying, like, I don't call it nerves anymore. I think it's negative. I call it excitement.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a good message, isn't it? And and that was just like 3 days ago I watched that. Yeah. And I thought, what a lovely thing to, you know, what a lovely alternative.
To switch it around.
Like,
yeah.
You know, rather than being, you know, because I am excited. Yeah. So rather than being just nervous and just losing the plot, I'm actually excited as well. So why not, you know, use that as, you know, getting on stage rather than just being a mess.
Is it addictive?
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Because anything that makes your adrenaline rise becomes quite addictive, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like having your first cup of coffee in the morning. Yeah. It's great. I love it. And that's like probably my favourite side of music is performing. And I can't wait to do more of it, because I've been quite heavily working in the studio over the last few months. And, you know, I'm saying to my manager, I'm like, please get me a gig anywhere. Anywhere will do. I'll go on the street.
Busking outside.
Yeah, I'd love it though. I would. If that was set up for me now, I would. I'd just do it. So yeah, it's my safe place, yeah.
What's your favourite song to sing?
What, my song? Or
just, what's your favourite cover and what's your favourite of your songs?
Okay, so my favourite cover is Billy Joel, New York State of Mind.
Okay, wow.
Have you heard that song?
Yeah.
The lyrics are amazing in it, and I love it where it takes me, that song, because it takes you into New York.
Yeah.
And it's like, I remember listening to it from the age of 12. I learned it when I was 12 years old, I think. And I always go back to that song, because it's just like, it's like my dreams in a song kind of thing.
Okay.
Like having a New York state of mind and wanting to be in New York and sing in New York and stuff. And I love singing that song. Quite like the challenge of ballad. My favourite song of my stuff, I would say, is Welcome to My Life, which is about the music industry, actually. So it's about the pain that you go through doing what you're doing in the music industry and meeting people along the way. Like, one of the lyrics is, I've been walking around in this disco town. On every corner seems to be a clown. And it took a little while for me to figure it out, what's wrong for me and what is right.
Yeah.
Same old story, repeating itself. I found trouble again, again, again. So it's that constant, you know, you've got to get through.
Push
rubbish.
Through.
Yeah. You've just got to just keep going, keep going. And then welcome to the tears that I cry. I want to sing now.
So is that on your new album you're going to be releasing?
Yeah, so it's going to be on my EP. So we decided not to do an album.
Okay.
We're going to do a couple of EPs.
Okay.
So
explain what the difference, for those that don't know, what's the difference between an album and an EP?
So an EP is a shorter album. So it's more like a showcase of who you are kind of thing. So rather than having the 12 tracks, it's like a 5 or 6 track. Okay. And that is just like, you know, this is Raquel Reno or this is Stormzy.
Yeah.
And then it's a good way to release music, but not give too much away as well. So I could then write another EP 6 months later and I'll have the time whilst the first EP is doing well. And then I'll have time to be writing the second EP, preparing for that release, and then so on. But because the digital world is such a fast turnover now, shorter the better. Like, everything's short and sweet. Like, you look at social media now, it's like 30-second video clips, and, you know, you've only got someone's attention really in the first 3 seconds, really. Yeah. If it's not, like, it's hard. And it's just everything's changed dramatically. And yeah, I think we're just, you know, I've got a team around me now that will guide me into that. You know, I'm so glad I didn't release a 12 track album last year. It wasn't ready.
Okay.
And it's still not ready.
So you're going to be releasing an EP. Have you got a date on that yet?
It's going to be May.
Okay.
But if it's not, I mean, I want it to go out in May, but if I'm not happy with it or something needs to change, then it'll be later. But we're aiming for that. It's always good to say aim, because it's, you know, and I mean, there's loads of people, all my family are like, are you going to release anything? Like, I was like, well, yeah, I will, but when it's done, when it's ready. Yeah.
It has to feel right, doesn't it?
It's the work.
It has to feel right.
Yeah.
Because there's no...
Otherwise it'll bite you in the ass.
Yeah, and you would... Music is something that, when it's rushed, is really not a good thing.
No.
Because it's happened to other people that they've been rushing to making albums and then it doesn't do well. And then you're kicking yourself because you're thinking, actually, if I'd have just given myself a little bit more time and tweaked things that I wanted to tweak, then who knows what could have happened.
Yeah. I think it's all about profile as well now. So, like, you know, my profile's rising, but it's still not quite enough. And I think, you know, I'd rather release to 30,000 people than 10,000 people, because it's only 10% of 10,000 that are going to listen to my music, which is what, 100 people?
Oh, God. Don't worry, I'm rubbish at maths as well.
I failed at school. It's okay to fail maths, everybody. Yes. You've got a calculator now. Or your iPhone.
or a husband to do it for you. He's my human calculator, my mum. So what's the immediate plans for Raquel Reno? What's going to be coming up? What any events, anything happening?
Yeah, so my team now are working on some gig dates.
Okay.
In London.
Brilliant.
For the public.
Can I get offered? Ticket. Can I come?
Ticket based. So you'll be invited. You don't have to pay for a ticket. Oh, darling.
VIPs.
VIP. Bring your handbag.
Yes, absolutely. And
so we're just planning that now. And a couple of TV things coming up. Some things like this. Yeah. I'm really happy to do stuff like that, and some radio bits.
Brilliant.
And, got some gigs further down the line as well. Got one charity gig coming up. I can't remember the name of the charity, but it's through Mike Osman, who runs Great British Radio, which Charlie is chairman of. And I've got a little part in Great British Radio. So I'll be alongside Tony Hadley on that gig, which is exciting. Yeah. And Tony's a lovely man. He's also part of Shooting Stars Hospice. Okay. So we've met a few times, and he's a really nice, genuine man, Tony. Yeah, so I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Good.
And just working in the studio. I'm in a really big creative zone at the moment. So I'm working with lots of different producers and seeing what we can pull out the bag, because, you know, like, what I wrote yesterday is, you know, it's topping quite a lot of the tracks that I've written over the last 3 months.
So, okay.
Yeah, it's great. It's so exciting, yeah.
Oh, it's so nice to see you smiling when you talk about it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. God, get me on stage.
So just to finish off, you have your own record label, don't you? You set up your own record label.
Yes.
So Raquel, thank you so much for coming today.
Oh, thank you.
I had a really nice time listening to your story. And I think that it's really good for people to know the person behind the brand as well. Yeah. And hear, you know, where you came from and the struggles until you got to where you are and where you're going as well. It's important for people to see that.
Yeah.
But thank you for coming. And
thank you.
Do appreciate your time.
I love you guys. And I'm going to go and have a look at your handbags now.
Yes.
God, I sound so Gloucestershire when I talk to you. Like, I'm like, your handbags.
It's all right.
All right, my lover.
We can both be Gloucestershire together, right, my love? Right. But thank you so much. And you know what I think we should do is catch up in a little while.
Yes.
And see what goes on for you then.
Yeah, I'll be releasing a song soonish. I haven't got a date.
Let me know when you do.
But I'm going to try and pick the right one to release first. So
yeah, why not?
Yeah, so we'll catch up then. But thanks ever so much. I've had a lovely time, yeah, as always.
Thanks, Raquel. So
thank you.
Thanks for joining us. If you have any topics you'd like us to cover or any questions you'd like us to answer or to ask Raquel, just drop them in the comments section down below. Thank you so much.